mess with anything.
Okay, brethren, good afternoon to you. Once again, we're going to continue with our series of reading through the book of Genesis. Last time, you may recollect, we got as far as the early days of Isaac and some of the problems which he had. And now we pick up the story in Genesis chapter 27. Isaac now reaching the latter years of his life. And so Genesis chapter 27, and beginning in verse 1. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old, and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered him, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death." It could be, you know, next week, or a month away, or a year away, but I just don't know. "Now therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me," perhaps a nice pheasant or a partridge or something similar, "and make me savory food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." So Isaac was clearly intending to provide a blessing to Esau, who was the older son, but only older by a few minutes. Because if you recollect, you know, Jacob and Esau were twins. Verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau his son. I don't know if that was just accidental or whether she was eavesdropping. It has been known to happen. "And Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. But Rebekah..." So Rebekah spoke to Jacob her son, saying, and he was her favorite, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau your brother, saying, bring me game and make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Eternal before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death." Now, in a sense, you know, Rebekah knew that that Jacob was to actually get the blessings before the twins were born, and God had spoken to her and said that the younger was one to receive the blessings. So perhaps she thought she was helping out. "And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, 'Come on, look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man. He can easily tell us apart. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him, and I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing.'" He wasn't troubled about being deceitful. He was more troubled about being caught, which of course is very often human nature. We often only don't do things because we think somebody might catch us. If there's nobody around and we can't be spotted, then we'll do these things. That's a good old human nature in the raw. But his mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me." And he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. Now, some of the commentators suggest that these choice clothes, the goodly raiment of the King James Version, may well have been the skins that God made for Adam in the Garden of Eden, which had been passed down from generation to generation to the firstborn, and to Noah, and to Shem, and to Abraham, and so on. That's probably speculation, but possible. Verse 16. "And she put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hands," I guess like a sort of gloves, "and on the smooth part of his neck," like I guess a scarf. "Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and said, My father. And he said, Here I am. Who are you, my son? And one can only imagine that Jacob was probably trying to disguise his voice somewhat, make it sound like his brother's, and not doing perhaps a great job, but sufficiently confusing to get his father slightly puzzled. And Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn." Which, of course, is a downright lie. "I have done just as you told me." Another lie. "Please arise, sit and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because the Eternal, your God, brought it to me." That's another lie. Of course, actually implicating God in it this time. I mean, Jacob had a few problems with his character. And, of course, the name Jacob really means supplanter or deceiver. And he was rather prone to deceive. And, of course, in later years, it came back to haunt him. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not." So he was definitely a bit unconvinced. His voice just was not quite right. So Jacob went near to Isaac his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, you know, but the hands are the hands of Esau. They're all hairy." And he did not recognize him, because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And I guess Esau must have been really hairy if his hands were like the skin of a goat. Then he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "Oh, yes, I am." That's about four lies in about three verses. And he said, "Well, okay, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's game, so that my soul may bless you." So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near now and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing, and blessed him and said, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Eternal has blessed." Therefore, and this is now the confirmation of the birthright blessings which, you know, Jacob had cheated his brother out of earlier. "Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine." You know, these are blessings of prosperity. You know, fatness of the earth, the prosperity of the earth, plenty of grain and wine, the dew of heaven, ideal growing agricultural conditions. This was the blessings, the promises being passed down here to Jacob. "Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." And so, that's the birthright now confirmed to Jacob. Then it happened, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. He also had made savory food, and brought it to his father, and said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me." And his father Isaac said to him, "Well, who are you?" And he said, "Oh, I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, "Who? Well, where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him. And indeed, he shall be blessed." And perhaps even there Isaac recognized that something dramatic had taken place. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry, and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father. You can't leave me out." But he said, "Your brother came with deceit, and has taken away your blessing." And Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob?" You know, the margin says supplanter or deceitful. "For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright," excuse me, "and now look, he has taken away my blessing." And he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, indeed I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son? There's not much left. You know, I've given him all the servants. I've given him his brethren. I've given him prosperity. There's, well, you know, he's got the lot. And Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. Now that is probably not translated particularly well. Several translations show that the meaning there is, behold, your dwelling shall be away from the fatness of the earth and away from the dew of heaven from above. The New American Standard Bible, I think the Revised Standard Bible. And if you read Mr. Armstrong's big book on America and Britain prophecy, Mr. Armstrong points that out too. You know, poor old Esau was being cursed here. He was being given, if you like, a not too great blessing, that he would be away from the fatness, away from the prosperity, away from the moist rains and the dew from heaven. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass, when you become restless, that you shall break his yoke from your neck. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, excuse me, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. You know, he's soon going to die. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. So, you know, family troubles are not something particularly new upon this earth. We know that Cain and Abel were probably twins. That's not absolutely certain, but probably twins. And of course, Cain killed his twin brother Abel. And now he has two more twins, Jacob and Esau. And Esau's saying, look, okay, once my dad is dead, that's it. I'm going to kill my brother too. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. Probably Esau mentioned it to his friends and others in the family, the servants and helpers and so on. And the word was passed back fairly quickly to Rebekah that, oops, we've heard that Esau is going to kill his brother once Isaac has died. And so she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. That's what's keeping him going. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day? I guess meaning that once the dad dies, then Jacob would be following him rather rapidly if Esau had his way. And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth, because Esau had taken, you know, two wives from the Hittites, and that had not pleased Isaac. And so Rebekah says, Esau's taken these two women from the Hittite tribes, and they're just making life so miserable for me. And if he does the same, if Jacob takes a wife for the daughters of Heth, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me? It'll be too much to bear. So therefore, in other words, Isaac, let's send Jacob away to get a wife from somewhere else. And of course, that means getting him out of harm's way. So carrying on to Genesis chapter 28, verse 1, then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So let's keep this in the family. You go over to Padan Aram and find one of our close relatives. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly or a company of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you're a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, excuse me, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, and sent him away to Padan Aram to take himself a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother, and had gone to Padan Aram. Also Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael, and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife, in addition to the wives he had. So he thought, well, I better not take any more of these daughters of Canaan, because it's not really pleasing my dad. But I do want another one for some reason. He wasn't happy with two. So he took one that was a bit closer in the family, Ishmael's daughter. You got to wonder somewhat at these men of old who seem to like to multiply wives unto themselves. I think most men today find that probably one wife is just about as much as they need to offer them challenges and opportunities. And of course, in today's world, people often have one wife, but sort of sequentially. They have one, and when she gets a bit older and a bit less pleasing, he divorces her and gets another wife. And when she gets a bit older, a bit less pleasing, he divorces her and gets another wife, and so on. But that's only one wife at a time. Now, these guys in ancient days seem to be happy enough to have two or three or four simultaneously. So either they were men of immense fortitude, or in some way the ladies were easier to manage. Not quite sure which was the case. Anyway, carrying on with Jacob, verse 10. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night, because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Eternal stood above it and said, "I am the Eternal God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land in which you lie, I will give it. I will give to you and to your descendants. Also, your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and the south. And in you, and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So here are the promises of race and grace. Promises of spreading across the whole world. And also that in your seed, that would be Jesus Christ, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So race and grace. Behold, verse 15, "I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." So there's an absolute promise, you know, given to Jacob in a dream. Promise of prosperity, promise of his descendants multiplying as the dust of the earth. Promises of even salvation, the promise of grace. And God saying, "Look, I'm going to watch over you, Jacob. I'm going to keep you safe, and I will bring you back to this land. This is the land of promise." Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Eternal is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the very gate of heaven." Then Jacob rose early in the morning, took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, which means house of God, but the name of that city had been Luz previously. And that particular stone, of course, is the one that pretty much most of us would believe to be the stone of destiny, a stone that made its way ultimately into Egypt and brought back with the Israelites when they left their captivity to the promised land, the stone in which the various kings of Israel and Judah were crowned, and the stone which up until recently was in London but is now in Edinburgh. And it's a very famous stone, the stone of destiny, or the stone of a Scoon. And if you go to Edinburgh today into the castle grounds, you can see the stone behind some glass cabinets, and a very interesting history it seems to have. Carrying on in verse 20, then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Eternal shall be my God, and this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me I will surely give a tenth to you. A tenth being a tithe in Old English. Chapter 29. So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and, obviously when they were all together, they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And I guess when all the flocks were there, there were probably more shepherds and perhaps more people to move the stone. It's implied the stone must have been, large stone and probably quite heavy. And Jacob said to them, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, we are from Haran. Then he said to them, in that case, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, indeed, we know him. So he said to them, and is he well? And they said, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. And of course, in these days, we didn't have telephones and cell phones and emails. So with people living hundreds of miles apart, you could go for years and years and not really know whether somebody was alive or dead, whether they were remarried or had children or whatever. Verse 7, then he said, look, it is still high day, or early in the day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together, and they, whoever they are, have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. Now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess, obviously a working gal. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So I guess if the stone was a heavy stone, that rather suggests that that Jacob was probably fairly powerful physically, because if it normally took a number of shepherds to roll the stone away, and Jacob wanted to help his close relative, Rachel, and see her sheep looked after, then all by himself he seemed to be physically powerful, shifted the stone and got on with the job. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And I guess that would just be a friendly greeting. I don't imagine it was a case of Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara. There's just a peck in the cheek, meeting her for the first time. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. This would be, really great news in those days. A sort of relative from hundreds and hundreds of miles away. Fantastic. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, you know, what should your wages be? You've been here for a while. You're helping out around the house and in the fields. I mean, just because you're my relative doesn't mean that should be for nothing." Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now, Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, it's better that I should give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Done. Stay with me. So that was the bargain. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed but a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Time just sped by. The man was very excited, and 7 years, it was like yesterday, just whizzed by. Then Jacob said to Laban, verse 21, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her." And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And I think the Hebrew implies it's a feast of drinking. So they're going to have a good time. Lots of alcohol. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. So I guess it would be nighttime now. They've been drinking and merrymaking and feasting all day long. And now perhaps Jacob's had perhaps a little bit too much. It's dark. The tent is dark, and Jacob doesn't spot that there's some deceit about to be played in him for a change. He's had a fair amount of that in his life up to this point, and now it looks like, rather ironically, he's about to be supplanted or deceived. Verse 24, "And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah." What happened to Rachel? You know, suddenly it's daylight, and he wakes up and looks across at beautiful Rachel, and hang on a second, that's not Rachel. That's Leah. What's she doing in my bed? And he said to Laban, when he obviously stormed out, "What is this you've done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" Which, you know, it's, I guess, what they call poetic justice. You know, "Why have you deceived me? I'm the one that deceives people. This is not fair." And Laban said, "It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." You know, it has to be the older one that gets married first. But of course, up till this stage, Laban hadn't bothered to make that known to poor old Jacob. Verse 27, "Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, so he gave his daughter Rachel as wife also." At the same time, I don't think it was another 7 years he had to wait. He had to work 7 more years to, pay off this debt. "And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as maid." So now you've got Leah and Rachel and Zilpah and Bilhah. So the four ladies and Jacob, who turns out to be a man of fortitude. "Then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. When the Eternal saw that Leah was unloved," or hated, but it probably implies just loved much less by comparison. I don't think Jacob actually hated her. It's just that he had far greater affection and love for Rachel. And by comparison, Leah was a little bit further behind. "He opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, 'The Eternal has surely looked at my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me, because, you know, I've produced the goods. Number one son, firstborn, Reuben. So now I shall be the favorite.' Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, 'Wow, because Eternal has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also.' And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, 'Now this time my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him three sons.' therefore his name was called Levi. And you do wonder a little bit here, because if she was so unloved, how come she's now on son number three? Because obviously Jacob must have been spending some time with her. These children aren't found under a cabbage in a garden. Verse 35. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Eternal. Therefore she called his name Judah. And then she stopped bearing. So now there's four sons to Leah, and so far none to Rachel. And, you know, knowing a little bit about ladies, I would surmise that in this household all was not well. These were two sisters, Rachel and Leah, and probably grew up fairly happily together. But I suspect at this point there was trouble in the camp. One would imagine that Rachel was rather frustrated, probably bitterly envious, bad-tempered, and Leah was probably strutting around as proud as can be and looking down on her sister. And no doubt the maids and friends were also taking sides. One can imagine there was rather an atmosphere. Carrying on to chapter 30. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. And that's rather brief, but I think we can imagine the situation. It would have been rather fraught at times. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? So she said, okay, here's my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she'll bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her. And so I guess this was normal in the culture of those days, that that if you had children sort of by your close maid, that there was some sort of legal entitlement to treat them as your sort of adopted son or daughter. Seems a bit odd, I guess, to us in our day and age. So then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her. And you got to wonder about Jacob's wisdom at this stage. He's already got two wives. Now it's on to number three. But anyway, Jacob seems to go along with this. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan. So I guess it was Rachel that got to name the maid's son. All very strange, some of these customs. But I'm sure this did not cause a happy household. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. An active man, Jacob. Then Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister. I think a bun fight was described there. And indeed, I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the goose is good for the gander. And this is getting very confusing. This sort of thing that made an excellent soap on the TV. So, okay, well, if Rachel's maid's doing this, well, hang on a second, I've got a maid over here as well. So she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. I have no idea what the maid's made out of this, but I guess if you were another wife to the wealthy individual, I guess, anyway, they got on with it. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, a troop comes. I don't know what she was expecting to come next. So she called his name Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher. So there's a big family being produced here, but one person so far is still not done a lot, which is Rachel. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. That'll be the swap. I'll have the mandrakes and you can borrow Jacob for tonight. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, Aha! You must come in to me, for I've surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he refused, of course. And he lay with her that night. It's going to be an interesting conversation with Jacob in the world tomorrow. But certainly the man was willing to take on a challenge. Verse 17. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob, would you believe, a fifth son. And that's just her contribution. Leah said, God has given me my hire, because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived again. Doesn't mention any more mandrakes, but circumstances seem to arise where once again Jacob was visiting Leah's tent and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me. Why? Because I have borne him six sons. So a bit of competition one imagines here. And she called his name Zebulun. Afterward, because Jacob wasn't finished yet, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Then, after all of this procreating and growing family, then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And I guess you can only imagine poor old Rachel's state of mind after the maids and Leah were producing, you know, boys by the barrel load, and she's got nothing to show for it. At long, long last, after many years, suddenly she has a son. Whoopee! So she called his name Joseph and said, the Eternal shall add to me another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away, that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go. For you know my service which I have done for you. You know, now it's time, says Jacob, to move on. I've got a big family now. All four of my wives have produced. I think it's time to move back to my home territory. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I've learned by experience that the Eternal has blessed me for your sake. You know, I can tell that having you around is good for me. You know, I think you know, Jehovah God is looking after us because of your presence. Then he said, name me your wages and I will give it. I mean, if you want money, I mean, what do you want to stay? Then Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, just, you know, a few sheep. And it is now increased to a great amount. The Eternal has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? You know, I've been here and I've looked after you, and your flocks and herds have multiplied, but, you know, it's time for me now. So he said, this is Laban, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. So here's the bargain. This is the deal. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. These shall be my wages. You know, we'll just walk through and we'll take out, you know, it'll just be a minority, but we'll take out the spotty sheep and the brown ones among the lambs and so on, and that'll be it. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come, when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen, if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. That would be a super deal. If you would be happy to go down that route, that would be fantastic, says Laban. So he, Laban, a deceiver in his own rights, so he removed that day the male goats were speckled and spotted, all the female goats were speckled and spotted, everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hands of his sons. Then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So I guess while Jacob had his back turned, Laban, a man of some skullduggery himself, got his servants to race around, find all these brown and spotted sheep and goats and run off in a hurry before poor old Jacob got round to it. So, I mean, Jacob had done his share of deceit, and he was having now some back on him. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar, and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted, which is probably rather unusual. Then Jacob separated the lambs, and made the flocks face toward the streaked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves, and did not put them with Laban's flock. You know, so he separated them. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. So this is Jacob, devious, cunning, clever, but he's sorting out here the weak from the strong. When he sees the strong sheep and goats, he takes them to one side, so that they will conceive before these magic rods. And if they're all weak and spindly, he lets them conceive somewhere else. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. So you're wondering exactly who's the biggest deceiver here. There's so much cunning. I mean, you could do a great film about this, really. Then, thus, the man became exceedingly prosperous, and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So by hook or by crook, and a fair amount of crook, Jacob becomes increasingly strong. And to be fair, you know, God's also doing what he said he'd do, watching over him, and no doubt it's God's hand that's involved in the way the sheep and the goats were breeding. But Jacob was helping out too. Chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, "Hey, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth." So suddenly now, as Jacob begins to prosper more and more, and as a strong livestock produce many more speckled and spotted than you'd expect, suddenly it's, hang on a second, this man from abroad, he's taken away all of our wealth. I mean, really, this was our dad's stuff to start with. And look, this really, thinking about it, this is really our wealth that he's taking away. So now some jealousy, some envy, bad blood starts to form. Verse 2, "And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed, it was not favorable toward him as before." You know, things were now changing. The atmosphere was getting a little bit spoiled. "Then the Eternal said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I'll be with you.'" So that's a message from heaven, and probably Jacob rather happy to hear it. "So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock, and said to them, 'You know, I see your father's countenance, his face, that it is not favorable toward me as it used to be before. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father.'" And I think it's fair to say that Jacob was a worker. You know, he was a strong man by all accounts. And he'd worked pretty hard for many years. And he, you know, deserved in many ways the blessings which he now had. "You know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me." You know, Laban was really a bit of a cheat and a rogue himself. And one rogue had met another. But at least Jacob had worked hard. And obviously every time that the sheep of one particular type were multiplying, Laban decided to change the rules. So he changed the rules, the sheep multiplied that way. So every time he tried to change the rules, he lost out. And Jacob just went on from strength to strength. Verse 8, "If he said thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flocks more speckled. And if he said thus, 'No, the streaked shall be your wages,' then, surprise, all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father, and really, he has given them to me. And it happened, at the time when the flocks conceived, that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and grey-spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see, all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and grey-spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. So it was explained really to Jacob in a dream that God's hand was involved in this, and it was really God guiding and directing affairs to prosper his man Jacob because of the promises to Abraham and Isaac and so on. Verse 13, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your kindred. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. And, you know, I guess they were concerned, of course, now for their children. They had plenty of sons and a daughter, and they were very concerned that, well, really, all this material wealth, this prosperity, these blessings, it's ours now. It's our sons, it's our daughters, so that's fine by us. We're happy with that. And I guess it's fairly impressive in a sense that, you know, Jacob did call them for a conference and a chat and say, look, this is the score. This is what God said to me. This is what I think we need to be doing. And so they had a bit of a chat, and they said, well, okay, amen, we're with you. Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, which was probably some distance away, perhaps 20-30 miles perhaps, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Hebrew is teraphim, household idols, and I guess that gives us a clue about Laban. Not only is he a bit of a rascal and a cheat and a deceiver, he's clearly also an idolater and has got numerous idols in the house. Perhaps he was an early Roman Catholic. Then Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So they packed their bags in the middle of the night and quietly stole away. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river, that'll be, I guess, the Euphrates, and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. So I guess perhaps somebody in the house had sort of said, hey, you know, Jacob and Rachel and Leah and all the grandkids have taken off. Let's go and tell Laban. And so they probably got on a donkey and raced off. And it took a couple of days to get to where Laban was, and they told him in verse 23, then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey. It took a week to catch up, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But, and we can only imagine quite what this rascal had in mind, but God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. So a bit of a warning, Laban. One imagines Laban probably had perhaps a few ideas about teaching some lessons here and presumably taking everything all the way back. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives, taken with the sword? This is disgraceful conduct. Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. And pull the other one, Laban. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. And I guess that's what all the small army that was with him were about. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, you be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. He's my man. And I think Laban had enough common sense to realize that perhaps he'd better just be a little bit more careful here. And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods, you scamp? Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, well, because I was afraid, for I said, well, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. And, you know, perhaps Laban's character wasn't really a very good character. It certainly seems that way. And Jacob had perhaps good reason to be a little bit fearful. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And so he said, oh, well, if you find somebody with your stupid gods, well, they can be executed. But go on in, you prove something. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, into the two maids' tents, but did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. So quite a few tents here. And now Rachel had taken the household idols, the teraphim, and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. And one of the commentaries suggests that whoever possesses household gods would be considered the legal heir. So that if this was the case, then Laban would know that whoever has custody of these teraphim, these idols, would be destined legally, at least, to inherit all of his possessions. Now, I don't know if that's exactly the case or not, but certainly Laban was rather concerned to get these items back. Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you. So we see that Laban is now searching around, and Rachel has got another little story here. It seems there's plenty of dishonesty, plenty of cheating, plenty of devious people around in this household. So Rachel says, well, I can't get up at the moment because it's at that time of the month, and I just can't move. And so clearly Laban accepted that little bit of deceit. And he searched, it says, but did not find the household idols. So he looked everywhere, and no trace. Verse 36, then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What have I done? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? You know, you've come after me like I'm some sort of crook. Although you've searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Eh? Where is it? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. Go on in. Where's your evidence? Where's your proof? You've looked in all the tents. You've searched here. You've searched there. Go on. Bring out your evidence. Let's see it. Verse 38. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. You know, I've looked after your goods perfectly. That which was torn by beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You'd acquired it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. You know, you've been a hard taskmaster. You know, even if we lost an animal that the beast attacked, I had to carry the cost of that. Verse 40. There I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. You know, I've spent many a night open-eyed and vigilant, watching for wolves and so on. And I've worked hard in the day, in the night, in the summer, in the winter. Verse 41, thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock. And you've changed my wages 10 times. You know, you're a rascal, you're a scamp, and you're a rogue, Laban. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you'd have sent me away empty-handed. You know, you are a dishonest man. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, well, these daughters are my daughters. These children, they're really my children. And this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters, or to their children whom they have borne? So he's begrudging right to the very end. Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, a treaty or a truce, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban called it Jagar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And the margin says that both those terms mean heap of witness. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore his name was called Galeed, also known as Mizpah, because he said, may the Eternal watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. And so the place was called Galeed and Jagar Sahadutha, and also Mizpah, which means watch or watchtower. And occasionally I've seen people with rings with the word Mizpah on them. I think I've seen necklaces with the words of Mizpah sort of dangling from them. And people usually, it's often boyfriends and girlfriends and husbands and wives that use Mizpah with the sort of the feeling that it means may the Lord watch over you while we're apart, in a sort of affectionate sense. But in fact, between Jacob and Laban, it may the Lord watch over you, you deceitful, underhanded, skullduggery creep, because I don't trust you one inch. And that's what their Mizpah sort of meant. It wasn't really a kind and affectionate form of watching. Verse 50, if you afflict my daughters, you rascal, or if you take other wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. I don't trust you an inch, so watch out. Then Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is this pillar, which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judged between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. One imagines he wasn't in a very good attitude, because he was kissing goodbye to his family and to lots of camels and sheep and cattle and lots of wealth. And of course, didn't realize it, but his household gods were disappearing as well. And so he went back probably rather bitter and twisted. But God had told him, sorry Laban, don't you dare speak any harmful words to this man. Carrying on then, on chapter 32, as Jacob and his crowd make their way on towards the west. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim, which is all very mysterious, because one wonders, what do you mean the angels of God met him? How many angels? 2? 10? 100? And what did they say, if anything, and what were they there for? And Jacob saw them, so he saw the angels camping there, and he said, we'll call that place Mahanaim, which means double camp, because I'm camped here with my family and brethren and servants, and the angels are camped here as well. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, because he knows that, well, we're now heading towards dangerous territory. My twin brother is out there, and the last time that we were together, he was threatening to beat my brains in. And now here I am, heading back into his territory, and what sort of welcome will I get? It will be a Colt 45 pointed towards my nose, or what? And he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau, thus your servant Jacob says, the twin brothers, but when you meet my twin brother Esau, say, your servant Jacob says, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. This is the message they were to take. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. So he's going to try and butter up his brother and be very humble and, see what the response is. Then the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he's also coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Oops. that suddenly doesn't sound like too good news to Jacob. 400 men, that's his army, with knives and swords, and you know, they're going to come and, I think this is going to be trouble. So Jacob, it says, verse 7, was greatly afraid and distressed. You know, he'd rather hoped, perhaps, just a sort of a, I'll be so happy to see you again, my twin brother. We can't wait to be together. I'm going to get a feast on and a banquet. You hurry on over. Let's have a nice meal together. Instead of that, suddenly Esau is racing towards them with 400 men. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, so you know how he's thinking, then the other company which is left will escape. They can race off. And if he attacks the other one, then the other one races off. Then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Eternal who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, just my walking stick. And now I've become two companies. There's so many of us here, so much cattle and oxen and sheep and you know, sons and a daughter and wives and so on. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well, and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for a multitude. You know, you've made promises to me, God, and, you know, so I'm asking you, please, to intervene at this stage. I'm asking you to deliver me from my brother, because I think he's out for no good. So he lodged there that same night, and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother, 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 foals. Then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass over before me, and put some distance between successive droves. So he's breaking them up into like small packets. There'd be sort of 20 donkeys here, and over there would be sort of 10 foals, and over there a bit, you know, the goats, and over there a bit, the sort of female goats, and so on. Little groups on them. And he commanded the first one, saying, you know, you go off in your little group, all by yourself, first of all. When Esau, my brother, meets you, and asks you, saying, to whom are you, do you belong, and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you? Then you shall say, they are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he also is behind us. So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, in this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and also say, behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face, perhaps he'll accept me. So the idea was that the first group would go off on their own. Esau meets them and gets told, well, this is a present from Jacob to you, Esau. Oh, that's very kind. And they join a bit further. Oops, here come some more donkeys. And these are a present for you, Esau. Really? Oh, it's very kind. And he comes a bit more. Oh, here's another bunch coming. Oh, these oxen are for you, Esau, from your brother. Are they? Oh, thank you very much. A bit further, then here's some more animals coming. What are these for? These are a present as well. And obviously, you know, present after present after present. The idea was that if Esau was intent on mayhem and violence, this might just help him, you know, appease him a little bit. 21. So the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. So all of them were now gone, heading off towards the west. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. In my Bible, the word man is a capital M on it, because of what comes next. Now when he, that's the man, man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. I'm just going to say that earlier we did see some indications that perhaps Jacob was quite a powerful man. rolling that stone, that big heavy stone off the well and so on. And they spent many years out in the watching over the sheep and the cattle and running off the wolves and so on. So I think we can probably assume that Jacob was a fairly powerful man physically. And so he wrestled with this man until the breaking of day. Now, I don't know how many hours that would be. It doesn't say when they started wrestling, but they could have been at this for 6 hours by now. And when he, the man, saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched or struck or hit the socket of his hip. And the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So this man, beat Jacob on the hip and put his hip joint in some way out of joint. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So Jacob had been wrestling for hours and hours and hours with this man. And we take this, in fact, to be Jesus the Christ, who had sort of manifested himself here as a physical human being, as a man, and had taken on a wrestling match, with Jacob. And yeah, we all know that Jesus Christ appearing as a man could have beaten the daylights out of Jacob in about 2 seconds, but that was not the point. The point was just seeing how much perseverance, how much effort Jacob would put out. Would he sort of give in after 10 minutes and say, "Oh, I submit, I've had enough of this, it's too much for me"? Would he give in after half an hour, an hour? What was Jacob's character like at this point? Was he now an overcomer? Let's see. So he fought and wrestled, and I've wrestled a little bit in the past when I was a teenager. I used to go to judo classes, and I've wrestled for an hour or two, and an hour or two wrestling and so on, it drains you. You pour with sweat, your muscles ache, you can hardly get your breath, and it's jolly hard work. And I imagine that Jesus Christ put a pretty strong contest against Jacob. So anyway, morning has come, and perhaps the deal had been that they'd wrestled till morning. It's not really clear. And so he says, "Let me go, the day breaks." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me. Then I will let you go." So he's hanging on for grim life, this individual. So he said to him, "Well, what is your name?" And I think he knew the name. This is just the sequence about to start. "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob," which of course means deceiver or supplanter. And he said, "Okay, your name shall no longer be called deceiver or supplanter or Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men, and you have prevailed." And the term Israel, the margin says, means prince with God. That's one meaning. Others believe it means the man who saw God. It could mean either, depending on the exact derivation. So that means prince with God, or overcomer with God, or the man who saw God. But, what Jesus Christ is saying there is, you prevailed against your brother, really, and you did overcome him. You prevailed against Laban, you worked hard, and you've overcome him. And now you've wrestled with God all night, and you have, you prevailed with God. So your name has changed from Jacob, the deceiver, to Israel, the prince or overcomer with God. And then Jacob asked him, saying, "Well, okay, now tell me your name, I pray." And he said, "Why is it that you ask about my name? Why do you want to know? Do you in fact need to know? Don't you know who I am?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." And of course the name Peniel, as the margin says, means face of God. And Jacob knew exactly what had taken place there. And he had spent all night wrestling in the dirt with the one who became Jesus Christ. And it must have been some match, I imagine, where they've charged at each other, thrown each other through the air, leapt upon each other, twisted arms, twisted legs, twisted necks, pushed and shoved, sweated and strained, hour after hour. And here comes a daybreak, been fighting all through the dark hours of the night, and probably both parties are covered in sweat and dust and dirt and so on, and perhaps Jacob scratched all over the place, and certainly now with a rather nasty injury to his hip. Verse 31, "Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he," God, "touched or struck the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank." And so that was the end of a rather eventful evening for Jacob. And of course, where we now leave the story, as we must, I think, we've got as far through this as we can go today. We now come to the point where Jacob is about to meet his long-lost twin brother Esau. And will they meet on friendly terms, or will the swords be out and violence ensue? Well, I guess like the old movies, we have to wait till the next episode of this exciting series to find out for sure. Okay, that'll do us for now. We'll carry on next time with chapter 33.